hold us up, surround us with your mercy. Let us see your life and your love in your word and in others, and help us to be part of your renewing of the whole creation, beginning with ourselves and with your church, through Jesus Christ. Amen. Some of you, I assume, have not been in Bible class this week, right? But, so let me tell you what we've been doing and bring you up to date. You're perfectly good to have a Bible in your hands, but I'm going to ask you to keep it closed. Because what I've been doing all week is reading to the people gathered here the Gospel of Mark. And today we'll have the fifth section of that. I'm reading it from this book, Mark as Story. And unfortunately, there aren't any copies of it left in the bookstore, but it's still in print. It's a good book, in my opinion at least. And it's written by David Rhodes and Donald Michie, who at that time were at Carthage College in Wisconsin. David Rhodes is a New Testament scholar now at the Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago. And Donald Michie is an English prof and teaches literature, especially the novel. And Rhodes went to Michie, influenced by another fellow whose book I have, Dr. Gelber, and said, you ought to look at Mark as a story, as a novel, or, you know, as a story that is told. And he asked Michie, how do you go about that? And Michie and he started working, and the result was courses that they taught there at that college that ended up in this book. David Rhodes did his own translation of Mark, and that's in the front part of this book. And they ask you, if you're going to read this book, to read that that translation of Mark first, and then to read the book. And what I'm doing is really imitating David Rhodes. He was here in, 84, 85, somewhere around in there. And I sat up there, I remember, for one of the sessions, because it was a packed place. And what he did was tell the story from memory. He had memorized Mark. So he would just tell the story, and he did a portion each of the 5 days, and then he would talk about it. So I'm a poor imitation of him. I'm reading this story to you, and then I'm going to ask for your reactions to hearing it. But I specifically would prefer if you don't follow it along. You just listen to it as a story that is being told to you, as they suggest, of course, in this book. And then what we did this week, on Monday, we talked about the rhetoric of the story. That it's more than words. There's all kinds of rhetoric that is used. One largely is irony. There's a lot of irony in the book of Mark. And how the story is put together and what is selected and the style of telling it. The second day we dealt with the settings, because where Jesus is in the story has a lot to do with the things that take place. And we looked at the number of times he was on the sea and by the seashore and in the mountains and desert and in the cities, and how the first half of the story takes place way up in Galilee, and it's fast. Jesus, I think, there are 40 places that Jesus is in the first part of the book. And then he heads down south, and the story slows down. And he isn't going from place to place to place, but he simmers down and he ends up in Jerusalem, and the part that we'll deal with today is in Jerusalem. The third part, we talked about the plot as it comes out in Mark, which is based largely on conflict. And then yesterday we talked about the characters, the cast of characters. Jesus, the authorities, church and religious authorities, as well as the public, and the disciples, and then the little people, the walk-on people that come into the story. And we talked about how they fit in. And then today, after we get done chatting about your reactions, we'll talk a little about, does the Gospel of Mark have a happy ending? And with a big question mark, okay? So we'll pick it up, and if you will adjust yourself to just listen. And by the way, I've got a lot of strong feelings about that. That's what ought to be done in church. I don't like these little pieces of paper they pass out with everything printed on it when everybody is following along like this. And there's no contact between the person telling the story and reading. In fact, I've gotten to the point that when I am asked to preach, I memorize the gospel lesson and just tell it on that Sunday. But those are snippet, we ought to say. And now the snippet gospel is going to be read from, where do you go? And those are all little pieces. And this is an effort to put the whole story together. In here, it has no chapters or verses or anything. You know, that all came much later. The stories were just told as stories. We're in Jerusalem. It's getting near the end. All right? And as Jesus was coming out from the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Teacher, look, what stones, what buildings." And Jesus said to him, "You see these great buildings? Definitely not a stone will be left upon a stone here that will not definitely be pulled down." And while he was sitting on the Mount of Olives facing the temple, Peter, James, and John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us when these things will be. What will the sign be when these things are all about to be brought to an end?" And Jesus began to tell them, "Look out that no one mislead you. Many will come in my name saying, 'I am,' and mislead many. Now when you hear battles and reports of battles, don't be alarmed. It's necessary for these to happen, but it's not yet the end, for nation will rise against nation and realm against realm. There will be earthquakes in different places. There will be famines. These are a beginning of birth pains. Now you look out for yourselves. They will hand you over to Sanhedrins, and you'll be beaten in synagogues, and you'll stand before governors and kings for me as a testimony to them. And it's necessary first for the good news to be proclaimed among all Gentile nations. And when they lead you away and hand you over, don't be anxious ahead about what you are to say. Instead, say whatever is given you in that hour, for you won't be the one speaking, but the Holy Spirit. And brother will hand over brother to death, and a father his child. And children will rise in rebellion against parents and have them put to death. And you will be hated by everyone because of my name. But whoever endures to the end will be saved." Now when you see this horror of desolation, standing where it's necessary for it not to stand, let the reader comprehend. At that time, those in Judea are to flee to the mountain. Whoever is on the roof is to come down without entering to take something from his house. And whoever is in the field is not to turn back to take his cloak. How awful for those who are pregnant and those nursing a child in those days. Pray that it not happen in winter. For those days will be an oppression the like of which hasn't happened from the beginning of creation, which God created, until now, and definitely won't happen again. And if the Lord had not cut short the days, no flesh would be saved at all. But because of the chosen ones whom he chose, God cut short the days. And at that time, if anyone says to you, "Look, here is the anointed one. Look, there he is," don't put faith in him. For false anointed ones and false prophets will rise up and give signs and portents to lead astray, if possible, even the chosen ones. But you look out I told you everything ahead. However, in those days after that oppression, the sun will be darkened, the moon won't give its light, and the stars will be falling from the heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. At that time, people will behold the Son of Man coming in clouds with tremendous power and glory, and at that time he will send the angels and gather together the chosen ones from the four winds, from the extremity of earth to the extremity of heaven. Now from the fig tree, learn a riddle. When already its shoots have become tender and it's putting out the leaves, you know that the summer is near. So also you, when you see these things happening, you are to know that he is near, at the door. I swear to you that this generation will definitely not pass away before all these things happen. The heaven and the earth will pass away, but my words will definitely not pass away. Now about that day or hour, no one knows. Neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, except the Father. Look out, stay awake, for you don't know when the right time will be. It's like a man away, leaving his house and giving his slaves the authority to each his work. He ordered also the doorkeeper to keep watch. So keep watch, for you don't know when the Lord of the house is coming. Whether in the evening or in the middle of the night or at the rooster crow or early in the morning. Otherwise, he might come unexpectedly and find you sleeping. Now what I say to you, I say to everyone. Keep watch. Now the Passover festival and the festival of unleavened bread were 2 days away, and the high priests and the legal experts were seeking how to seize Jesus by deceit and put him to death. For they were saying, not among the festival crowd, otherwise there will be a disturbance of the populace. Jesus was in Bethania, in the house of Simon the leper. And while he was reclining to eat, a woman came who had an alabaster flask of very expensive, pure nard ointment. Breaking open the alabaster flask, she began pouring ointment over his head. And some were angry among themselves. Why has this ointment been wasted? For this ointment could have been sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor. And they were harsh with her. And Jesus said, let her be. Why are you giving her trouble? It's a good work she did for me. For the poor you have always with you, and whenever you want, you're able to do good for them, but me, you won't always have. What she was able to do, she did. She anointed my body ahead for the burial. I swear to you, wherever the good news is proclaimed in the whole world, what she did will also be told as a remembrance of her. And Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went off to the high priest to hand Jesus over to them. Now when they heard, they rejoiced and promised to give him silver. And he began seeking how at some opportunity he might hand him over. On the first day of the festival of the unleavened bread, when it was customary to slaughter the Passover lamb, his disciples said to him, Where do you want us to go off and prepare for you to eat this Passover meal? And he sent two of his disciples and said to them, go to the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him, and where he enters, tell the master of the house, the teacher says, where is my guest room where I am to eat the Passover meal with my disciples? And he will show you a large upstairs room, furnished and ready, and there prepare for us. And the disciples went out and came to the city and found things just as he told them, and prepared the Passover meal. When it was evening, he came with the 12. And while they were reclining and eating, Jesus said, I swear to you that one of you will hand me over, one eating with me. And they began to be sad. And to say to him one after another, surely not I. He said to them, one of the 12, the one dipping bread with me in the bowl. Son of Man goes just as it is written about him, but how awful for that man by whom the Son of Man is handed over. Better for that man if he had not been born. While they were eating, he took bread, blessed it, broke it, then gave it to them and said, take it, this is my body. And taking a cup, offering thanks, he gave it to them and everyone drank from it. And he said to them, this is my blood of the covenant which is about to be poured out for many. I swear to you that I definitely won't any longer drink from the produce of the vine until that day when I drink it new in the rule of God. And after singing a psalm, they went out to the Mountain of the Olives. And Jesus said to them, you will all stumble because it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. However, after I'm raised, I'll go ahead of you in Galilee. Peter said to him, even if everyone else stumbles, at least I won't. And Jesus said to him, I swear to you that today, this night, before the rooster crows twice, you will renounce me three times. But he kept saying wildly, even if it's necessary for me to die with you, I'll definitely not renounce you. And everyone was saying the same. They came to a place which had the name Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, sit here while I pray. And he took along Peter, James, and John with him, and he began to be alarmed. Anguished. And he said to them, my life is profoundly sad to death. Stay here and keep watch. And going ahead a little, he fell to the ground and began praying that if it were possible, the hour might pass away from him. And he said, Abba, Father, everything is possible for you. Take this cup away from me, yet not what I want, but what you want. And he came and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, Simon, are you sleeping? Weren't you strong enough to keep watch 1 hour? Keep watch and pray that you don't come to a testing. The spirit is eager, but the flesh weak. And again going off, he prayed, using the same words. And again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were very heavy, and they did not know how to answer. And he came the third time and said to them, are you going to sleep through and keep resting? It's over. The hour came. Look, the Son of Man is about to be handed over to the hands of sinners. Let's go. Look, the one handing me over has come near. And immediately while he was still talking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived, and with him a crowd with swords and clubs from the high priests, and the legal experts, and the elders. Now the one handing him over had given them a signal, saying, he is the one I'll kiss. Seize him and lead him away with security. And coming, immediately approaching him, he said, Rabbi, and kissed him dramatically. And they put hands on him and seized him, but one of those standing by drew his sword, struck the slave of the high priest and cut off a little piece of his ear. And reacting, Jesus said to them, as against a bandit did you come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Day after day I was among you in the temple preaching, and you didn't seize me. However, so the writings might be fulfilled, and leaving him, everyone fled. And a certain young man was following him, wearing a linen cloth around his naked body. And they seized him, but leaving the linen cloth behind, he fled naked. They led Jesus away to the high priest, and all the high priests and the elders and the legal experts gathered. And Peter followed him from a distance on inside to the courtyard of the high priest, and he was sitting together with the guards and warming himself in the firelight. Now the high priest and the whole Sanhedrin were seeking testimony against Jesus to have him put to death. But they were not finding any, for many were testifying falsely against him, and their testimony would not agree. And some rose and testified falsely against him, saying, "We ourselves heard him saying, 'I will pull down this sanctuary made with hands, and in 3 days build another not made with hands.'" But not even on this point did their testimony agree. And rising to the center, the high priest asked Jesus, saying, "Aren't you answering anything at all? What are these men testifying against you?" But he kept quiet and did not answer anything at all. And again the high priest asked him and said to him, "Are you the anointed one, the one of the blessed one?" Jesus said, "I am. And you will behold the Son of Man sitting on the right of the powerful one, and coming with the clouds of heaven." The high priest, tearing his vestments, said, "What further need have we witnessed? You heard the blasphemy. How does it appear to you?" And they all condemned him to be deserving of death. And some began to spit on him and cover his face, then hit him and say to him, "Prophesy." The guards took to beating him. Peter was down in the courtyard. When one of the maids of the high priest came, and seeing Peter warming himself, she looked intently at him and said, "You too were with the Nazarene Jesus." And he denied it, saying, "I don't know or understand what you're talking about." And he went outside to the forecourt, and a rooster crowed. And the maid saw him and began again to say to those standing by, "He's one of them." But again he denied it. And after a little while again, those standing by began saying to Peter, "Truthfully, you're one of them, for you two are a Galilean." But he began to put himself under a curse, to swear an oath, "I don't know this man you're talking about." And immediately for the second time, a rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the saying how Jesus had said to him, "Before a rooster crows twice, you'll renounce me three times." And lurching off, he began sobbing. Immediately, early in the morning, the high priest held a council with the elders and legal priests, legal experts, and the whole Sanhedrin, bound Jesus, took him away, and handed him over to Pilate. And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Answering him, he said, "You are saying so." And the high priests were bringing charges against him. Pilate asked him again, saying, "Aren't you answering anything at all? Look how many charges they're bringing against you." But Jesus no longer answered anything at all, with the result that Pilate was amazed. Now at festivals, Pilate would release for them one prisoner whom they requested. Now the one called Barabbas was bound in prison with the insurrectionists and had committed murder in the insurrection. And coming up, the crowd began to ask Pilate to do just as he customarily did for them. Pilate answered them, saying, "Do you want me to release for you the King of the Jews?" For he knew that on account of envy, the high priest had turned him over. But the high priest stirred up the crowd to have him instead release Barabbas to them. Pilate again spoke up and said, then what should I do with the King of the Jews? They screamed back, "Crucify him!" Pilate said, "Then why? What harm has he done?" But they screamed all the louder, "Crucify him!" Now Pilate, wishing to do the satisfactory thing for the crowd, released to them Barabbas, and whipping Jesus, handed him over to be crucified. Now the soldiers led him away inside the courtyard, which is a praetorium, and they called together the whole cohort. And they put a purple cloak on him, and they set him on him a crown woven from thorns, and they began to greet him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they were beating his head with a reed pole and spitting on him and getting on their knees. They were giving him obeisance. And when they had mocked him and made fun of him, they took the purple cloak off him and put on his own clothes and led him out to crucify him. And they drafted a passerby, a certain Simon Cyrene, coming from the countryside, the father of Alexander Rufus, take up his cross. And they brought Jesus to a place, Golgotha, which means place of the skull. And they tried giving him wine drugged with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him. And they divided up his clothes, casting lots for them who might take what. And it was 9 in the morning when they crucified him. And the inscription of the charge against him was inscribed, "The King of the Jews." And with him they crucified 2 bandits, one on the right and one on his left. And those going by were blaspheming him, wagging their heads and saying, "Ha! The one who was about to pull down the sanctuary and build one in 3 days, save yourself by getting down off the cross." Likewise also the high priests, mocking him to each other with the legal experts, were saying, "Others he restore, himself he isn't able to save. Let the anointed one, the King of Israel, get down now off the cross so we might see and have faith." And even those crucified along with him ridiculed him. When it was noon, a darkness came over the whole land until 3. And at 3, Jesus shouted in a loud cry, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why did you abandon me?" And some of those standing by heard him and said, "Look, he's calling for Elijah." Someone ran and filled a sponge with cheap wine, put it on a reed pole and offered him a drink, saying, "Let him be, let's see if Elijah comes to get him down." But Jesus, letting out a loud cry, died. And the curtain of the sanctuary was ripped in two from top to bottom. Now when the centurion, who was standing in front of him, saw that he died like this, he said, "Truthfully, this man was a son of God." Now there were also women observing from a distance, among them Mary the Magdalene and Mary the mother of James the Lesser and of Joses and Salome, who were following him and serving him when he was in Galilee, and many other women who came up with him to Jerusalem. It was already evening, and since it was a preparation day, that is a day before the Sabbath, Joseph from Arimathea, a prominent council member who also was himself expecting the rule of God, came and, taking courage, went into Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Now Pilate was amazed that he had already died, and summoning the centurion, he asked him whether he had been dead long. And finding out from the centurion, he granted the corpse to Joseph. And buying a linen cloth, taking him down, Joseph wrapped him in the linen cloth and put him in a grave that had been hewn out of a rock, and then rolled a stone up against the door of the grave. Now Mary the Magdalene and Mary the mother of Joses were observing where he was put. And when the Sabbath was passed, Mary the Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome bought aromatic oils so they might go and anoint him. And very early in the morning, on the first day after the Sabbath, they went toward the grave as the sun came up. And they were saying to themselves, "Who will open the door of the grave?" And looking up, they observed the stone had been rolled away, for it was very large. And entering into the grave, they saw a young man sitting to the right, wearing a white robe. And they were alarmed. And he said to them, "Don't be alarmed. You're seeking Jesus the Nazarene, who was crucified. He was raised. He's not here. Look, the place where they put him. But go tell his disciples, even Peter. He's going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will behold him just as he told you." But coming out, they fled from the grave, for they were trembling and stunned, and they said nothing at all to anyone, for they were afraid. And that's Mark's story of Jesus. Like to follow the pattern we've used during the week and ask you now just to spend a little time in groups, and since we have just small groups, a small number, maybe groups of three would be better, to just share with one another what did you notice in the story? How did the hearing the story this way affect you, if it did at all? Or what questions you might have about the story? And then we'll get back together and share those and talk about that a little bit, and then I'll share what's said in this book about the happy ending, okay? It'll take 7 or 8 minutes. So just move your chairs around and get in groups of three. I think that'll work best. Okay, let's come back together, please. And now our pattern has been just letting the folks from these groups just say, what did you talk about? What are the things that sort of interested you? And maybe that'll stir up the rest of us to respond as well. Do you want to start off here?
We were talking about what it meant that even though Christ knew how his disciples were going to respond to him, he still took them into the room, he washed his feet, and he had the Eucharist, even though he knew what was coming up.
Yeah. In Mark now, he doesn't wash the feet.
Oh, all right. I guess I know.
Yeah, right.
Sorry
that's right.
about that.
For this week, we're trying to stick with Mark.
All right.
Okay, that's fine.
All right, that's all. But still, the love he had and reaching out to them, even though he knew what they were going to be doing. Mm-hmm. And then there was a comment that, you know, we can have a feeling for Judas because he did what he did, but yet he didn't realize the real consequences. He didn't believe it. He probably didn't believe that Christ would really die, mm-hmm. that some miraculously he could get out of mm-hmm. it. And then talk somewhat about the three Marys who came to the tomb, and such a big thing that happened, and yet they were so afraid they couldn't go and tell other people. So that
and again,
was
in Mark, it's two Marys.
All right, two Marys.
It's funny how we have to limit ourselves when you deal with one gospel.
Because right.
we bring stuff in from all over. That's right.
But when I was in mm-hmm. in primary grades, I learned a little hymn, the three Marys went to the grave, and uh-huh. I still have that.
Yes, that's great. All right, next group. Do you want somebody there share what did you notice?
Well, we didn't really find it that different to hear
okay.
it that way. Mm-hmm. Thought that what we really hear is the gospel the way that we've always heard it,
uh-huh.
in a way.
All right.
Except that Marie had said that she noticed the word Mary the Magdalene instead of Mary Magdalene, mm-hmm. and that was a curiosity to her.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
we talked a little bit about how just listening. Well, I guess it was my comment because mm-hmm. I used to be a teacher, and I know that there's three learning styles, and one is that you learn through listening, mm-hmm. and one through seeing, you know, visual,
right.
and one through touching,
mm-hmm.
and that in just listening, we may leave out some of those who don't learn that.
Sure.
Way.
That's for sure. So, next group. Back there?
Well, we just thought it was interesting looking at the life of Jesus from the perspective of Mark, because mm-hmm. like watching an accident, you get a different version. Mm-hmm. It was interesting, it brought back, there were little hooks along the way that I can't remember all
yeah.
of them, but one of them that I got stuck on was that said that to watch that earth and heaven shall pass away.
Mm-hmm.
I can always figure out that the earth could pass away and disintegrate sometimes from something or other, but when heaven passed away, then I got lost because
right.
of where all the saints are. I came to this meeting to hear what you had to say about our
yeah. Okay. Sure. Okay. Up here or back there, please.
We talked about a lot of different things, and I'll run just real quick. Again, today, hearing the story in one piece has such power. We noticed, secondly, that it was definitely the case that Jesus knew the outcome, and he submitted to it. One thing that struck me in particular was that the old song, he could have called 10,000 angels.
Uh-huh.
The idea that he could have changed the process at any given point, but he showed forbearance and he held back in the way that he dealt with the authorities. And then another thing that struck me, and this is my deal here, is we talked about whether Mark, the gospel, brings out that he is the king or not. And someone brought up the idea that the anointing by the woman was such a powerful symbol of a kingship.
Mm-hmm.
And then he is brought before the council, and he does say that I am the chosen one. And then the third thing is always been in my mind the most powerful thing is the centurion makes the comment that surely this was the Son of God. And the centurion at that time was such a respected figure, very powerful officer in the Roman army. You couldn't get much better proof than that. But we still are curious as far as how do you deal with the woman running away in fear. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're talking about.
Okay, good. You folks, we're a group, a little group here. Do you have anything to add? Yeah, I know you were there, but you two were here.
We talked about... the difference from the other Gospels, that this was a happy ending because they realized that Jesus was no longer dead, was no longer there in the tomb. The use of the word tomb, I noticed, for grave, where I'm familiar with tomb, was modern. We were confused about, it's always confused me, definitely you shall not die until my kingdom has come, words to that effect. And the best we were talking about near-death experiences, where all the ones I've read have said they see or hear someone, and they have seen a tunnel with this powerful light, and they come back when they've lived, they come back no longer afraid of death and inspired to go on. And the Marys, which Mary is his mother. Mary Magdalene was the lady of the evening. And Mary was...
They're not all agreed on it. That's been a popular way to talk about her, but they're not agreed that she really was.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right.
I'm going to cast aspersions on her.
Sure.
But anyway, was she the mother of James? Was that?
No, she wasn't. There's Mary Magdalene, who comes out of that story, and then Mary, the mother of Salome and Josie's in that. In Mark, Jesus' mother is not at the grave. This is the difference in Mark. That's why.
One other thing too, the fact that we heard about a fig tree that bore fruit in this set of passages, whereas earlier the fig tree was cursed because it did not bear fruit.
Bear fruit, right. Let me go back and mention something I mentioned earlier in the week. We end up with four Gospels. Now, that's overkill. We don't need four Gospels. Why not just one? That ought to be enough, and we know the story of Jesus. Well, obviously the early church, whenever they got around to saying, well, this will be our canon, this will be our scriptures, they thought there was enough in each one, that each one had a difference enough that it was worth keeping them all. So that's why I was suggesting this week, let's try to look at Mark, forget the others for a moment, we can't, but try, forget the others, and just see, what does Mark say? And of course, one of the really, there's a number of things about Mark. Jesus is much more impatient and angry in Mark. He screams at people in Mark. Don't get that in the other gospel. Forget those others for a while. And he's really at odds with the disciples in Mark. He's chewing them out all the time. Never once in Mark does he commend the disciples. Teachers may take that into consideration. We always say we have to commend everybody. In Mark, no way. Now, you can get your teaching principles elsewhere, but this is a tough one. And then, of course, the ending. In this chapter, their conclusion of is it a happy ending or not, that's my title, they didn't put that title in there. They talk about what's the intended reader like. From the gospel, do you get any feeling whom Mark had in mind? Remember, this is about 40 years, it's written down 40 years after Jesus died. But it's been told as a story all through those years. It's an oral history. It gets written down later. It's influenced by many things. But whatever Mark had in mind for these readers, and they could have been different, they list the different kinds of people that may have been sitting around listening to this story being told, they would have expected the resurrection, because that word had been spread out enough. Now, this is probably up in Galilee. So this is not down in Jerusalem. This is, story is told mostly up in Galilee, as far as we know. And internal evidence seems to say that as well. So there may have been people, and you know, there were so many rabbis and so many crucifixions and no media, you know, no evening news or anything like that. They may have known or not known about Jesus, but let's assume they knew about the resurrection. But what they didn't expect was the women being scared and running away. Their contention, that's exactly what Mark wanted them to do. He wanted them to be shook and stop at that point. He didn't want to say what happened after a while. And now let me back up and add one more thing, and then I'll make a final statement about the happy ending. In the other book that I read this week by Gelber, it is, you know, there is a fight going on in the early church between Galilee and Jerusalem. And even the young man that runs away naked, the assumption was the people knew that was John. And John and Peter and James were Jerusalem. And John is, you know, there's a little put down kind of a thing. You can say there, maybe not, but there's maybe. And the assumption of the book of Mark is that the disciples did not go to Galilee. They didn't go. He said, come meet me up there. They didn't. The people who worked up in Galilee, like Mark said, they should have. You got a whole different view. You wouldn't have ended up with all this hierarchy in Jerusalem. And you wouldn't have ended up being so impressed with Jesus' mother and Jesus' brothers and sisters as they were down in Jerusalem. Up in Galilee, it sounds like they're saying, you'd have got a cleaner story up here. And so he tells it sort of that way. And then, now the happy ending. You decide. If they didn't go, will you? Will you be a follower? If the disciples let him down, will you pick him up and go to Galilee? And if you do, it's a happy ending. And if you don't, it's not a happy ending to the story, because the story is for you and not just to be put out and printed and sent off. So the happy ending depends on your response. The women are scared. In this story, they clam up. Will you be able to overcome? Respond to Jesus and go and tell. And try to live the rule that Jesus in all of the Gospel of Mark talks about. And that is, you can use power. You have power. But use it for people, not to destroy. Will you go? And if so, it's a happy ending. That seems to be what... No, that is what... Rhodes and Mitchie say, and that seems to be what they feel the Gospel of Mark was like. So, any questions or comments? We got about 2 minutes. Yes?
I'm sorry, to me it's a happy ending, but I've always misunderstood how he meant, you shall not taste of death until you see me coming in glory with my kingdom. Yeah. And I thought of the Holy Spirit, which we do not see, comes to people when they die, or how that works out.
I don't know.
Near-death experiences. Yeah. Me, since I believe in near-death experiences, to think that they do see.
Maybe. I don't think Scripture is clear about it, but I think we've been given our brain and imagination by God, and we're to use them. We only get in trouble when we say somebody else has to think the same way as we do about it. Right? So I think you're free to imagine how that goes for you. Somebody else? Anyone? I think it's fun. Well, go ahead, please.
This may not fit, and yet again, it
go,
might.
Go.
I want to refer to the movie Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
To me, the ending, for the people who have seen it, the ending of that movie is very, there's no focus on it. There's a whole series of events that you know are about to take place. Mm-hmm. And I can't say that it's directly parallel to this type of a story, but mm-hmm. the effect on me emotionally was, I want to know more about what happened to these people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm getting the same type of unfulfilled feeling here. Mm-hmm. Is that roughly?
I think that's very close to what this book is saying and what they feel Mark wanted to happen.
Right.
That's why his story, different from John, totally different, written by different people, different time. You know, this is 40 years later, John is about 70, 90, 80 years later, from a different group of people, living in a different place, telling it to a different group. In Mark, what you're saying is what Mark wanted to happen. And why, apparently, now we guess, why they kept it in. Kept John in for what John had to say, kept Matthew in for what Matthew had to say. But the contention of the book is, don't mess them all up, because you miss some of the richness of each one. Don't make Mark be Matthew and all that stuff. And since we do a lot of that, you know, put them all together, we miss the punch of the story. That's why when I read a book of short stories, I like to read one and then stop and deal with that one and come back, because otherwise I'm right in the next one and I get them mixed up, you know. I like to take them one at a time. So, encourage you to have fun with Mark and Matthew and Luke and John as well.
Thank you so much for your work this week. It's just been wonderful.
Pleasure to be able to do it. Enjoy your time at Holden.